running out of time a little bit. Most of the days from now on we'll be discussing two pastimes. Today we're going to discuss about Pralamba Sura and correcting the Brahmins who were performing sacrifice. So, Pralamba Sura, first of all, represents lust for the opposite sex plus the desire for profit, adoration, and distinction. So we understand that Pralamba Sura is representing, in a broader sense, the mode of passion. All types of passionate attractions, passionate desires, like that. Pralamba Sura, of course, is another one of these demons killed by Lord Balaram and not by Lord Krishna. Danakasura was the other one killed by Lord Balaram. Danakasura is representing more ignorance, and Pralamba Sura is representing passion. So according to Brahmavaivarta Purana, in his previous life, he was Sudarshan, one of the brothers of Suhotra, who became Bakasura. Then there's a different description given in Garga Samhita, that he was Vijay, the son of a Gandhava king named Huhu, and he was cursed by Kuvera for stealing some flowers from one of his gardens. So as we explained earlier on, this apparent discrepancy or difference of version between these two authentic Vedic scriptures, this is something you find. Doesn't really mean anything is necessarily wrong, but it's just that a lot of these pastimes are repeated many, many times in different yugas or different kalpas, different days of Brahma, and there are some variations in detail. Ultimately, of course, we understand that the version, when there's any conflict or difference of version, then we would accept the version of Srimad Bhagavatam as being the most important, at least. And therefore we, if necessary, we would put aside other versions. One important example of that is the death of Maharaj Parikshit. In Srimad Bhagavatam, he just sits there very peacefully, and the snake bird Takshaka comes and bites him, and because the poison is so strong, Maharaj Parikshit's body burst into flame and he died. But in Mahabharat there's a description of how Maharaj Parikshit, when Takshaka was approaching him, Maharaj Parikshit tried to run away and escape unsuccessfully in the end. So we take it that the version of Srimad Bhagavatam in that particular case is more important, and that the other version described in Mahabharat is from some other kalpa, some other day of Brahma, some other universe perhaps. Something like this. So anyway, we have an example of some difference here between Brahmavaivarta Purana and Garga Samhita. So then he became Pralamba Sura, big demon, and he was also a close friend of Kamsa's, or servant of Kamsa. Kamsa enlisted him to try and kill Lord Krishna. So this particular pastime takes place in the middle of summer, in the middle of the hot season. Everything's very, very hot, but because Krishna's present, even though it's summer, everyone is feeling it to be like spring. Very pleasant conditions. Even in those days, it appears that summer was very, very hot and a little difficult to tolerate sometimes. But when Krishna was present, it was very nice. So the cowherd boys with Krishna and Balaram enter the forest, playing as usual. They were playing tag. They're also playing a game, I don't know what you'd call it exactly, but someone puts their hands over someone else's eyes, and then that person whose eyes are covered has to guess who it is who's covering his eyes. And Krishna, I forget exactly how he does it, but he has some special way of telling. There's some special way of telling. They would make wagers on these games. They would wager their flutes or their sticks or their ropes or their different things. They would wager on the outcome of these different games. They would sometimes act as kings. And it was around this time. Some of you perhaps haven't marked yourselves present. It was around this time that Krishna started to manifest, at least outwardly manifest, his conjugal attraction to the gopis. So it was right around the time of this pastime that Krishna started his practice of charging tax of the gopis. When they would be going through different places. There are a number of places where Krishna does like that. Govardhan Hill, we were there the other day. Varasana, there's another place where Krishna would try to charge tax. So Krishna is now manifesting more that conjugal mood. Actually, he'd already been manifesting it even right from the very, very outset. Even as a baby, he would manifest it. But it's just no one would notice it. But now it became much more apparent. So, Pralambasura, he disguised himself as one of the little cowherd boys who had to stay home that day. Perhaps it was his birthday or whatever, but Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that he had some duties to perform at home. So Pralambasura made himself look like that little boy. And Krishna acted in a very friendly way with Pralambasura. He was being very, very nice to him. Although we understand in his mind Krishna was meditating, how shall we kill this demon? Krishna would meditate like that. How will I kill these different demons? And when he figured out how he was going to do it, it might entail waiting a little while till the opportune moment came, and then he'd kill the demon. But the description is, by Rupa Goswami actually gives the description, that Krishna, once he'd figured out how he was going to kill the demon, it was like he couldn't wait. Although he had to wait. So he had this mood of like pent-up enthusiasm. It's described in Nectar of Devotion that when it was time, or when the time was approaching for Krishna to kill Kamsa, he had figured out how he was going to do it, but he still had to kill the wrestlers. So there was some delay before he actually got to kill Krishna. And it's just Rupa Goswami, it's described in Nectar of Devotion, how Krishna, from time to time, he was casting his eyes in the direction of Kamsa, looking at him and thinking about how he was going to kill him. And he was feeling so enthusiastic. He was actually feeling, you could say, almost, in fact, the description is lusty to kill Kamsa. And Rupa Goswami says, he was casting his eyes on Kamsa, just like a lusty man casts his eyes on a prostitute and is thinking of how he's going to enjoy with her, even though there may be some delay. So Krishna, he was very happy. He enjoyed killing these demons, although sometimes there was a delay. There's a nice description Rupa Goswami gives of when Mother Yashoda, when Krishna was a little baby, Mother Yashoda would, in order to put him to sleep, she would read a bedtime story, which would mean a pastime of one of the avatars. And she was reading to Krishna about the Ram Leela, Sita Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman. And the whole Leela was building up and coming to the climax. And as it came to the climax, the battle was just about to begin. Little baby Krishna leapt up on the bed and shouted out, "Lakshman, bring my bow, bring my bow." So he would really get into it. So with Pralambasura, Lord Krishna was meditating. He was acting very nicely on the surface, but he was meditating. How are we going to kill this demon? Then he worked out one way. And in order to put that particular plan into effect, he had to put Lord Balaram under the influence of Yoga Maya. So it was quite a little bit involved plan, and it involved one team game. So it was a team game of, actually, I'm not sure what it was, the actual nature of the specific game, but it was a team game, and there was Krishna's side and Balaram's side, and the teams were chosen according to the natural affections of the boys. Whoever was more affectionate to Krishna was on his side, and whoever was more affectionate to Balaram was on his side. So Pralambasura ended up on Krishna's side. So Krishna's side lost. Now this is all going on by the influence of Yoga Maya and as part of the plan of Krishna himself. So the loser's side had to carry the winning side on their shoulders for some distance. This was all going on in Bandiravan. How many of you have been to Bandiravan? Just a few of you. It's very nice. Bandiravan means the forest of banyan trees. And the same banyan tree which this pastime took place under, that same banyan tree is still there. Big, big banyan tree. Very, very nice. So they're under this banyan tree having this game. Then Krishna's side lost. Then they had to carry Balaram's side on their shoulders. And it just so happened that out of many, many cowherd boys, Pralambasura had to carry Balaram by Krishna's arrangement. So Pralambasura, it's described, his real business was to kill Krishna, actually. Of course, also to kill Balaram, but he was more, Krishna was the main one. So, but he'd heard about Krishna, so Pralambasura was feeling a little scared. So he thought, I'm going to kill this Balaram, but in case Krishna interferes, I'm going to have to take Balaram away. So he took Balaram away from under this big banyan tree, and they started going some distance off. Balaram was enjoying being on the shoulders of Pralambasura under the influence of Yoga Maya. Actually, Krishna, by his own desire, Krishna wanted Balaram to be able to enjoy being carried on the shoulders of this boy and having a little higher perspective on things than usual. So Krishna didn't withdraw the curtain of Yoga Maya for a while. And when he did, he just slowly started to withdraw the curtain of Yoga Maya. So after a while, Balaram thought, how come we've got separated from the other boys? And he was wondering, what's going on with this little cowherd boy who's carrying me? But he didn't initially think that, oh, this is a demon and it's a plot. He thought, maybe he's just got lost. But then he was thinking, no, he may be a demon. Gradually, this curtain of Yogamaya was becoming lifted. So then Balaram increased his weight. And this so-called little cowherd boy found that he was struggling more and more to carry Lord Balaram. So then Pralambasura started to manifest his real form. But Lord Balaram was not completely out of the control of Yogamaya. So Lord Balaram found himself going up into the clouds. And he was wondering, what's happened to this little cowherd boy? Now he looks really strange. Very dark, black like coal, actually. And very nasty, mean looking. So he was wondering. But still it hadn't completely clicked in his mind. So he still stayed on Pralambasura's shoulders for a little while. And then he really got a perspective of Vrajmandala. And Krishna, this was part of Krishna's plan. He wanted Lord Balaram to be able to really enjoy floating around up high and seeing all around Vrajmandala. Then finally, to just completely remove the curtain of Yogamaya, Krishna called out to Lord Balaram. That is described in Vishnu Purana. Lord Krishna calls out, what is this mentality of a mere man which you're exhibiting, O soul of all? Even though your own true nature is more confidential than all other secret things. So Krishna called out. Then Lord Balaram realized 100% exactly what was going on. But still he hesitated to kill Pralambasura. Anyone like to guess why? Or anyone know why? Because Pralambasura had been in the form of a cowherd boy. So Lord Balaram was thinking, it's not good to kill a cowherd boy. It's not good. So he didn't want to kill Pralambasura. But then he thought, no, actually, Krishna killed a woman one time, and he killed a calf once, because they were demons. So actually this cowherd boy really is a demon. So then he smashed Pralambasura on the head. Pralambasura's head split in two, just like that. And blood came cascading out. He vomited blood. It's described as being like red manganese when a volcano erupts. It's all this red manganese, molten manganese, comes gushing out as a very brilliant red against the black color of the volcano. So Pralambasura's head looked like that, like a volcano gushing out this brilliant red manganese, which was his blood. And that was the end of Pralambasura. So then Pralambasura specifically explained, he attained impersonal liberation. So that's our first pastime for today. Now, in a quite different mood, the pastime of correcting the Brahmins who were performing sacrifice. As we mentioned, the conjugal rasa is just starting to manifest in a very sort of overt way. And anyone know what pastime this is immediately following? Any Krishna book scholars among us? This is immediately following. Bhaktivinoda, you wanna? Huh?
Hare
immediately, this immediately follows the pastime of the stealing of the gopis' clothes. In fact, it's the same day. It's the same day. Krishna has stolen the gopis' clothes, and some of the boys were there with Krishna when he stole the gopis' clothes, particularly the very small boys, those who are maybe like 4, 5, 6 years old, up to about that age. They were there with Krishna, and they had witnessed that pastime of the stealing of the gopis' clothes, and in their own childish way, because there had been a lot of joking. Because there had been a lot of joking, and it had been a rather drawn-out pastime, taking some period of time. So those little coward boys got very excited, and they forgot to take lunch. Therefore, they were feeling very hungry. They are feeling very hungry. So therefore we find that they're begging Krishna and Balaram that, oh, we're feeling so hungry. That who does he want? Who is a meal? Sridhar Swami says lunch. But anyway, they missed a meal due to the excitement of that particular pastime. And they're feeling very hungry. So just like, in a similar way to at the beginning of the Dainakasura Leela, they said to Krishna Balaram that we want to eat. We want to eat. You've got to help us. You've got to make some arrangements so we can eat. Jiva Goswami suggests that probably they're just acting like they're hungry. But because they're transcendental, it's unlikely they were really hungry. Actually, the same point comes up, or similar point, in the chastisement of Kaliya, that all the boys dropped dead from when they drank the water which had been poisoned by Kaliya. So our acharyas explain that this is a sign that Krishna's yoga maya had already taken control even at that early point in the Kaliya Leela, because the coward boys have spiritual bodies and they can't die. But now they appear to die, so this is just yoga maya covering their eternal existence temporarily. So Jiva Goswami suggests that probably the coward boys weren't hungry, but they were just saying they were hungry, that they were hungry, because they felt that Krishna and Balaram might be hungry. And this would give Krishna and Balaram an opportunity to eat if they were really hungry. So then Krishna explains to them that yes, I know how you can get some food. There's some Brahmins performing sacrifice. They have lots of food, which they're actually intending offering after the sacrifice. But you go now and tell them that Balaram and Krishna want it. And even though the sacrifice isn't finished, they'll probably let you take this food. So he tells them, ask in the name of Balaram. But do you know what happened? Who knows what happened when they actually went? Yeah, we know that. But they were told to ask in the name of Balaram. Right. It's all correct. But specifically what was what happened initially is that they forgot what Krishna said, and they didn't ask in Balaram's name, but they asked in Krishna's name, because they're generally more attached to Krishna. So this sacrifice that was going on was an animal sacrifice, some elaborate Vedic yajna in which they kill an animal. Not so nice, really. And Krishna, when he told the particular anatha involved here is excessive attachment to one's position in Van Ashram and becoming proud if one's in a higher position like these Brahmins were in. So when Krishna told the boys to go, he said that Brahmins, even if they have austerity, knowledge, dharma and so forth, don't satisfy me if they're devoid of devotion. On the other hand, their wives, even though lacking austerity and so forth, satisfy me because they have devotion. So Krishna's specifically speaking the lesson of this pastime there. So as Sankarshan Prabhu and Krishna Priya Prabhu said, the Brahmins being very, very much aware of their position in Varnashram and very attached to doing the sacrifice correctly according to the strict Vedic standard, they weren't prepared to give any of the food until they finished the sacrifice, and they hadn't finished. So they just told the boys to go away. So then Krishna told the boys to go back and ask the wives, which they did. As soon as the wives Krishna actually told them, don't tell the wives of the Brahmins that I'm hungry, that I'm really hungry, because it may be too much for them and they may just faint, and in this way it may not come to be. Just tell them I would like something to eat. So they went and said like that. Then the wives of the Brahmins, they had to escape. Just in a very similar way to the gopis in the rasa dance, they had to make a getaway with a whole lot of food. So they, different people, husbands, family members and others were trying to stop them. But still they made a getaway, except for one, and she left her body. One of the wives, she just left her body because of intense feelings of separation. As soon as they arrive with all this food, they see Krishna standing there looking very beautiful. And there's a very similar pattern, sequence of activities, very similar to the rasa dance. Because we understand that in this relationship between Krishna and the wives of the Brahmins, that there is the element of the conjugal rasa is existing there. So Krishna, when they arrive, he addresses the wives of the Brahmins in exactly the same way that he addresses the gopis. What can I do for you? What has brought you here? Can I do something for you? Like that. And then Krishna told them, he accepted the food, but then he told them, you better go back. Then the wives of the Brahmins speak one verse, which is exactly the same verse as one of the verses that the gopis speak to Krishna when Krishna tells them to go back when they come out to meet him for the rasa dance. I don't have the Sanskrit here, but they say, O Almighty One, please do not speak such cruel words. Rather, you should make true your promise that you'll always reciprocate with your devotees. Now that we have attained your lotus feet, we simply wish to remain in the forest, to carry upon our heads the garlands of tulsi leaves, which may be neglectfully kicked away by your lotus feet. We're ready to give up all material relationships. So this is exactly the same as one of the verses spoken by the gopis. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes an interesting subtle point that they are saying that we'll just stay in the forest because we are Brahmins and you are a Vaishya or something. Say a Vaishya. So it might be embarrassing for you if people see you're being served by brothers. Who knows what that difference is as this Leela unfolds?
They went away, but you stayed back.
Yeah. The Brahmins' wives, they agreed, all right, and they went home. But the gopis, they refused, and they stayed with Krishna. So the understanding is that even though the Brahmins' wives are in the conjugal rasa as far as their relationship with Krishna is concerned, but it's not as intense as the gopis. So, Krishna, then the boys sat down, they were very happy, particularly Madhu Mangal was very happy. He was apparently the main one who was protesting that we're feeling hungry. Madhu Mangal one time, he got captured by the gopis and tied up, and they beat him and sprayed him with colored dyes. So in the end, he looked like, you know, like a living rainbow. It was really most extreme, effulgent with so many different colors. Then he cursed them that if you don't, that you better give me one lakh of laddus. Otherwise, you'll really be in trouble. So then the gopis, they said, ah, who, you a Brahmin? We don't take you seriously. But then later Krishna came and told the gopis that actually he is a Brahmin and you've offended him. So you'd better give him his 100,000 laddus. So they did. And Madhu Mangal, of course he has a spiritual body, he ate all of them. All 100,000 laddus.
Madhu Mangal was not very fat.
Anyway, spiritual body. Spiritual body. And then at the end, he asked for more. So the boys very, very happily ate all this food, but Krishna didn't eat anything. Why? Why didn't Krishna eat anything? Because he was feeling remorse and feeling separation through having sent the Brahmins' wives back. So he felt depressed and he just didn't want to eat anything. So, another one of his main reasons though for wanting the wives to go back to their husbands was so that they could become, the husbands could get the mercy of their wives. Which they did when they saw their wives come back and they saw how transcendentally effulgent they were. Then the Brahmins realized, these ladies, because they've had the association of Krishna and served Krishna nicely, just see the advancement they've made. So then they declared, then they accepted their wives as their gurus. And they said, to hell with our learning, to hell with our aristocratic births, to hell with our expertise in sacrificial rituals. These women may not have undergone spiritual training, purificatory rituals, etc., but just see the love they have for the Supreme Lord. So in this way, the Krishna consciousness of those Brahmins was awakened by the mercy of their wives. And then they thought, let's also go and see Krishna. Let's also go and offer something to Krishna. But then one of them said, no, we better not, because there may be some spies of Kamsa around. And if they see that we're going to associate with Krishna, then we may be in trouble. So therefore they didn't go, even though they were feeling like going. So this shows that they were less advanced, even though they became Krishna conscious, but they were less advanced than their wives, who just went to see Krishna. So, let us just distribute these at this point. These are some notes taken. It's actually one of Prabhupada's purports from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Matajis, and for the men. The anatha, which I'm going to particularly focus on Pralambasura, and the anatha which he represents is the mood which results from being attached to the mode of passion, sensual attractions, meaning just plain and simple lust, just a very straightforward attraction to the opposite sex, but also more subtle level. Does everyone have one? Everyone who would like one have one? Yes? But Pralambasura also represents the subtle influence of the mode of passion, profit, adoration and distinction, attraction to profit, getting profit and being worshipped and being seen as being important like that. So this is more subtle. So of course, just the mode of passion as such, and attraction to the opposite sex and gross sense gratification. We follow our four regulative principles. At least that's like the first and a very substantial step that devotees take as far as combating the tendency towards gross sensuality. But these more subtle elements, that's particularly what is the point, at least, that I want to focus on and which is being focused on in this purport. You may be familiar with this purport. It's in the chapter of Madhya Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita, the cleansing of the Gundicha temple. And you would know that Lord Chaitanya, he headed up a big team of devotees and they cleaned the whole temple from top to bottom and inside and outside until it was spotless. But then Lord Chaitanya himself cleaned it again. Well, then it got a second cleaning. Then they got even more dirt out. So in this purport, it's explained that second cleansing indicates how a devotee who's already following regulative principles, in other words, who is already not involved in just gross sensuality, how the devotee then goes deeper down and cleanses out certain more subtle contaminations of the mode of passion. So it's a very interesting subject, very relevant, because we're all following the four regulative principles, but we all know that Maya is still there. It's not that just by following the four regulative principles that you really become a saint. At least we can look at ourselves like that. There are subtle anathas and subtle contaminations there, attractions, and profit, adoration and distinction. These are subtle, Prabhupada would say, subtle sex life or subtle forms of the influence of the mode of passion. So in the purport here, there are a few things that we want you to learn for our next little test. You'll all be very happy to know we're going to have another little test. Jai, Haribol. And it'll be very easy, particularly because I'll tell you all the questions and the answers beforehand. And this is one of them. So if you look on these three sheets we've handed out to you, look at the second page, right down the bottom, the last paragraph, the last seven lines. Prabhupada, referring to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's comments on the same verse and the same subject. Prabhupada says that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that even though one may become free from the desire for fruit of activity. In other words, one may be following regulative principles and regularly engaged in devotional service, but still subtle desires will be there, may be there. And then he gives a number of examples. Conducting business to improve devotional activity. Then the main ones which we want you to come to grips with are kutinati, you see there? Third line up from the very bottom of the page. Kutinati, or fault finding. Prabhupada also explains it on the next page as duplicity. We already discussed duplicity. But fault finding is also apparently a part of it. Then, pratishtasa, the desire for name and fame, high position. Jiva himsa, envy of other living entities. Nishid achar, becoming involved with things which are against the principles of scripture. Then kam, desire for material gain, which you could say is the same thing as just gross attraction to sense gratification, but Prabhupada explains it, we'll see over the page, as being more that a type of attraction which arises on the basis of allowing yourself to become affected by these other defects. Then attraction to sense, just gross sense gratification, arises again, even though you've already given it up by accepting the regulative principles. So it's sort of like a residual manifestation of gross sensual attraction.
Calm,
yeah. And puja. Oh, wanting to be worshipped. How nice. Oh, I'm sorry.
Popularity.
Then Prabhupada goes into some elaboration there. Kutinati means duplicity and fault finding. We already talked about duplicity, acting like you're more advanced than you really are, and then you end up just meditating on sense gratification, and then you come under the influence of this calm again, having already given up calm, lusty desire, by following regulative principles. But then you find it comes again because you're allowing yourself to be affected by these subtle contaminations. So your desires for sense gratification come up again, sort of in the context of these more subtle desires. Then jiva himsa, the next paragraph down, envy of other living entities. We discussed this a little bit also. Prabhupada saying it actually means stopping preaching. Prabhupada says you shouldn't stop preaching and just sit down in a solitary place thinking that now I'm going to become very advanced and just chant Hare Krishna and, you know, my preaching days are over. Like that. We already discussed this subject pretty much some days ago, but interesting to see here. We shouldn't compromise with non-devotees. Prabhupada's also putting this under the heading of envy of other living entities. We shouldn't compromise with mayavadis or professional gurus, people like that. But we should always speak the truth. And if we... Anyway, yeah, like that. So then, next paragraph, Prabhupada says, to give us practical instruction, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cleansed the temple twice. His second cleansing was more thorough. The idea was to throw away all the stumbling blocks on the path of devotional service. He cleansed the temple with firm conviction, as is evident from his using his own personal garments. So in this way, Prabhupada explains that the devotee's mind, or that the marble became perfectly cleansed, just like glistening and very, very nice and clean, just like the pure mind of a devotee. Just like the pure mind of the devotee, peaceful and very pure and clean. Then the next paragraph down, even though all dirty things may be cleansed away, in other words, one may be following regulative principles, sometimes subtle desires remain in the mind for, well, so many things. Impersonalism, monism, material success, dharma, artha, karma, and moksha. So these are all these subtle things which got cleansed away with the second cleaning. So, we should apply ourselves very carefully. Some people think that once you're following the regulative principles, then you've made it. You're now there. You're pure. You're a saint already. You've already gone back to Godhead, in effect. But it's just the first step. And the second step is more subtle and more difficult, in a sense, and very, very important. It shouldn't be neglected. So what is the real key to this? How to really, I mean, of course, we should cleanse ourselves, meaning watch our minds and watch out for these desires coming up and these wrong ideas coming up. But the foundation for all our efforts in this regard has to be hearing and chanting. Very, very serious hearing and chanting. Hearing and chanting the holy name of the Lord. Hearing and chanting the pastimes of the Lord. We mentioned in regard to Dainikasura that Dainikasura represents ignorance, and to get out of ignorance, then you have to hear about Krishna or read Prabhupada's books. But in order to read Prabhupada's books, you need to get a taste. Otherwise, you'll be struggling, falling asleep. But we actually want to become absorbed in reading Prabhupada's books. Who can remember what we suggested as being very helpful for that? What is it? Serving the devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam is recommending that. That if you serve the devotees, then you'll get a taste for hearing and chanting. And then if you absorb yourself in hearing and chanting, Krishna within the heart will cleanse away all these things. Then the verse after that verse, I think that was verse 17, Shrinvatam Swakataya Krishna, how Krishna within the heart cleanses desire for material enjoyment and these more subtle contaminations. He cleanses them away. Then the next verse says, who knows the next verse? Other than Mahamantra Prabhu, who probably knows all the verses. Anyone else know? Mahamantra Prabhu, would you? Right. That by regularly hearing, regularly attending Srimad Bhagavatam class, and serving the pure devotee, then all the abhadrani, all the inauspicious things are cleansed, reduced practically to nil. And then, bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. One comes to the level of nishta. Naishtaki, nishta. One becomes fixed. And once one is fixed, then progress is relatively much, much easier. The path is more or less open. So, becoming fixed means having done a good second cleansing, getting these more subtle things away. Otherwise, when you read through this purport, we'd like you to read the whole thing, then you'll see Prabhupada refers to how these subtle contaminations, they can cause real disturbance in the life of the devotee who's trying to make progress. A devotee can sort of get hung up even though the devotee is already following the regulative principles nicely, but still the devotee can get hung up and find it difficult to make good progress because of these subtle contaminations. So, of course, we should, when we see within our minds that our minds have any of these wrong ideas, we should try and cut them out. But to get the strength to do that, and also to get just that cleansing of the heart from Krishna, to remove those things at the root by His grace, we should hear and chant very seriously. Prabhupada was asked once about this prophet adoration and distinction problem. And Prabhupada said, yes, the solution is Trinada pi sunichena, Tarora pi sahishnana, Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. I don't know if I told you once, but Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was giving class once, and he leant forward to his audience and said, I know the secret. I know the secret how to become Krishna conscious. And everyone was really quite struck by that. And then he said, Trinada pi sunichena, Tarora pi sahishnana. So, very serious hearing and chanting about Krishna, trying to chant, not just trying to chant, but actually chanting without the 10 offenses, at least trying to be on the clearing platform of chanting, which means no more offenses. We may not be completely pure, but at least no more offenses, and really hearing and chanting with real determination. This is what we need to do. So these two are linked, Dainakasura and Pralambasura, the modes of passion and ignorance. There's a link between the two, and there's a link between the remedies for the two also. Serving the devotees and hearing and chanting, these things are linked. So comments or questions? Madhuri? Yes.
Sometimes we see that some devotees are really serving the devotees. They don't like to hear the chanting too much, and some devotees might be liking to hear the chanting, they might not like to hear so much.
Well, Srimad Bhagavatam has its perspective on the subject, as we mentioned. But, you know, those devotees who are serving the devotees, you know, if it hasn't manifest yet, then it will manifest in time, there's no doubt about it. And perhaps those who already have an attachment for hearing and chanting, maybe in a previous lifetime they served the devotees very nicely, and now it's bearing fruit. But if they don't serve the devotees, then, you know, they may lose the taste also. Yeah, sometimes it's like that. We have a taste, then we lose it. Then we have a taste, and then we lose it. But it's not that there's a defect in what the Bhagavatam has said. We serve the devotees, then the natural result by Krishna's grace will be a growing attraction for hearing and chanting about Krishna in different ways. Sankirtan, reading, preaching, in different ways.
Both the demons of ignorance and oppression, they are killed by their own balance.
Yes, that's
so
right.
Is it that the guru cuts his attachment?
Beg your pardon?
Is it correct when I see so that implies that the guru frees his desire
yes.
to his attachment?
We mentioned this when we were talking about Dainakasura, that in order to kill the two anathas which these demons represent, one has to really take shelter of Lord Balaram. And Balaram is represented in our lives by the spiritual master.
So the story of the old Deacon's demons can be placed to this?
Yes, yes, exactly. Okay. We have to really take shelter of the spiritual master and make a great effort with passion and ignorance in order to get out, because they are very powerful anathas. Yeah. Whereas the anathas which the demons kill by Krishna, which they represent, I mean, to make an effort is also good, one should make an effort, but Krishna, he really removes those anathas. He's very merciful in removing those anathas. Without making such an effort, the devotee becomes freed from those anathas. I want to tell you a couple of questions for our test. So one of the questions will be to tell us the Sanskrit and English for any three of these subtle contaminations which we just read, which are at the bottom of the second page of these notes, or this purport of Prabhupada's, going on to the third page. Is that clear?
One word for me.
Sanskrit and English, yes. Kuti nati, fault finding, or duplicity. Pratishtasa, desire for name and fame, or high position. So any three. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 6 of them. Is that clear?
Can you tell us the diacritics for that?
Sorry?
There's no diacritics on Sanskrit. Is there a necessity?
No. It's okay. This is printed out of folio and we haven't got we haven't got it yet, so. So you don't need to put diacritics. Then we want to know another 5 demons from this group, not from the first group that we discussed before the first test, but this group which we're discussing after the first test. Any 5, the demon and the anatha they represent, just as in the first test, but applying to this particular group of demons. Then,
what's the first demon from
Who is it? It's Brahma Vimohana Lila. Starting from Brahma Vimohana Lila onwards. Then, we'd like you to explain about something about these anathas which the demons killed by Lord Balaram represent. So for that, you could refer to your book. Would be best Dainika Sura, page 33. Right in the middle of page 33, there's a whole explanation from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we'd like you to write, to be able to write about a paragraph, say, explaining a little bit about these special considerations regarding the demons killed by Lord Balaram and the anathas they represent. Is that clear? Anyone not clear on any of these 3 questions? There'll be a couple of other questions, but we haven't discussed the subject matters involved yet. So now, let's see. We're only going to meet again on Friday. So, we're going to be discussing Govardhan Leela. Very nice Leela. So read, starting from page 47, Overcoming the Pride of Lord Indra. And then we'll discuss that on Friday. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.